you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh man, so how is that weather over there in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's late February means it's really ugly, and we're all eager to get outside for the nice weather. We have cabin fever. We're miserable.
I was in my city center today, this morning, and the amount of people who the weather, it's starting to turn out. Spring is certainly on the it's beginning round again, and people were looking to buy barbecues, and it's like it's not that warm yet. No, really. So
They're over
they
enthusiastic.
really are. They just want to get outside. They need that.
That's
They've got
right.
their outside itch once again. Just trying to push them outside,
Exactly.
man. So like I said, I came across your work and your blog, which I've got the website up on the page now of SharonAHill.com, because of a friend called Kenny Biddle. He, I think, I'm not sure if he did a piece with you, or whether he recorded an interview with a discussion. I mean, how did you guys get together? How did you find each other?
Gee, I can't remember. It's been so long now. We're both in Pennsylvania. So, we had some common friends, and it just evolved that we had common interests, and we were able to meet at certain places and walk around and have talks. And we've gone to Gettysburg a couple times,
Oh
which is
wow.
a paranormal hotspot
Yeah,
close
so
by.
tell me about that. So Gettysburg, that's the scene of the Great Battle, right? So for those people who actually don't know what that is, I mean, what would you describe what the Gettysburg is?
It's a battlefield during the American Civil War, and it was really a turning point in the war. And the location is in south central Pennsylvania, right near the border of Maryland. And the Union forces and the Confederate forces met sort of accidentally. It wasn't entirely planned, but they clashed, and it was huge casualties at this little town, this little farm town. And these big rolling battlefields were just littered with bodies. And it was quite traumatic for the townspeople. It was obviously a turning point in the war. And it's an interesting place, both geologically and historically, too, that the battle took place there. And now people go back there and feel that they have these paranormal spiritual experiences in this location because of all the death and trauma that went on there. So it is really a mecca for East Coast paranormalists to go there with their ghost meters and to do investigations there and to have conferences. So it's a cool place regardless, but it's got paranormal aspects to it
So,
too.
what kind of experiences do people report as occurring there?
They get a lot of EVPs. They say they see apparitions, they feel things, they go into the buildings, they feel spirits around, they're touched, they hear things, they just have a general sense of unease. And I have never experienced any paranormal activity worth discussing, really. But if you go to Gettysburg and you have this very deep sense of, I call it like a sense of place. There's a strange feeling to get there because the battlefield is there's tons of memorials there all over. There's hundreds of memorial statues erected and plaques that show some authentic pictures of the time of the battle. So you actually see these dead people were lying right here where I'm standing. And you get that very eerie sense that history may still be there in the cracks of the rock and in the corners of the building. And you just feel it just feels very strange to be in a place like that. So I think people feed off that experience and that sense of place.
Some people say the same thing about Auschwitz, that
Right.
there is a it has its place in history that should not be forgot, what it represents and what occurred there. So do you think that's the same kind of resonance that is happening there, that they feel the sense of, so this is a really important place for when things turned and changed, that should has a lot of memory, a lot of death, a lot of life, and a lot of story character, that has been sadly lost, for various reasons.
Right,
And
right. And people want to connect back to that history. They want to go back there and feel what it was like to find a way to experience it. And sometimes they do that through these paranormal interactions.
because I kind of wonder, is there paranormal groups, and I've seen this a few times, they almost become like hobby groups that will go and experience these things, and they actually get their support from each other. It almost becomes almost a therapy, to do that.
Yeah.
And I found that in a few groups that I've been involved with, and ones that I communicate with. They're made up of very, I hate to use the word, eclectic people. Some people who've had trauma, or they're looking for answers, and they come together and have a common bond. And it almost appears that they're having have a social group that has a common interest, and that'll be their weekly meeting. And they'll go and do a ghost hunt, or they'll go go to a graveyard somewhere. And
Yeah.
there's a lot of, I think there's a psychological feeling of wanting to just come together just to have the discussion, perhaps with like-minded people. Do you find that's the same that you can work up?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It happens with people who have those common beliefs, not only in ghosts, but also ufologists do this, cryptozoologists do this, the Bigfoot hunters do this. They get to go out in the field and have a day out in the woods and or spend a night out there looking for something. And it makes them feel important. It makes them feel special, that they're part of something special. And I wrote pretty much a whole book on how these paranormal groups are important in society. And they may not actually be getting good evidence that's showing that Bigfoot is real or that ghosts are any better evidence that we have over this decades of trying to look for these things, but they do serve a purpose in society, not only to each other, but to the greater society, because people have experiences. They have weird experiences, and they have to tell somebody about it.
That's right, yeah.
And so you have this community that's formed, whether either you're going to be part of this group and go to these investigations and research the subject, or you're just a person that has a problem in their house or in their backyard, or that they've seen something, had an experience. You have to share it with somebody who understands. And these groups provide that service.
They do. In fact, I was at my workplace a few weeks ago, and there's a lady I met there. A customer, effectively, issue, and then she started telling me. She says, "Oh, I've seen you on TV, and I could you tell me about this experience that I had 13 years ago?" And it
Yeah.
had such a profound experience on this lady that you're going, "I don't think I could ever accurately tell you what it is, other than to say I can accept that you're telling me your version of events. I can hear you telling me your story. I can hear that it's had a very powerful emotional effect on you." But as to what it is and how it's explained, I cannot do that. I don't know anything that was happening in the area at the time. And
That's exactly right. Yeah.
yeah, and that for a lot of people is very disappointing to hear. But when they talk to people who are, they're willing to go all out and believe everything and everyone before the reason kicks in, you find them repeating the story because they get that kind of buzz again. And
Yeah.
that's an interesting psychological thing to watch happen in groups or when you go to seminars and talks. People will often go over the same point it is, or they've had just one moment in their life where something similarly unexplained has happened. And it could be done to sheer coincidence, but the coincidence is not a reason that they want to discuss or think or even talk about. Or when you break down, say, the numbers of probability or whatever, they're like, "Oh, no, this has happened. This is because I saw it happen this way." And it's fun, but for some people, I think it's actually. There's a deep psychological damage that's being occurred to them.
Yes, yeah, and that was one thing that I noticed throughout my life journey, I would guess, and in how I relate to the paranormal. I'm not a paranormal believer, but I'm really interested in these subject areas, and I was disappointed basically in the literature that was out there of the general public information, the popular books and stuff. Just wasn't. I mean, it's the same stories being told over and over again, and I was more interested in details and people actually investigating. So I did gravitate into the skeptical community, and I was an active member there for many years. And I don't think that skeptical people who don't believe in the paranormal understand that degree of powerful experience, that people have these experiences, and I can't explain them, but I can't discount their experience, and it changed them.
Yes, it
It
did.
really changed them, and that's important. What if, for whatever caused the experience, it's important that they were
Yeah,
so affected by it.
I've learned to just I learned to say that I acknowledge that they are saying that, and for some
Yes.
people, I think that's actually just is more than enough for them to go, I've been believed, or I've been able to outlet that story upon to someone, and they're willing to listen, even if it's just 10 minutes, even if they want to have a cup of coffee and tell me their entire story about it. And you find that from that, there's often some other threads going on as well. And it's almost like they actually want a counselor who knows about these subjects that perhaps a counselor wouldn't talk about because they're going, "No, that's not rationale." And sometimes for many people, that's actually all they need.
Yeah, they just need to talk.
And they do indeed. So, the one of the reasons I reached out to talk to you is that I would have said at one time I was a person without reason. And I had some beliefs, and I wouldn't even say they were beliefs. They were conditioned upon me by the community of expectations that I thought were occurring. And it wasn't until I started going, well, how do we verify this? How do we check this? And then you realize that it kind of starts to come apart a little bit. And that's the point where you start going, okay, so what have we verified here? What have we checked? Have we gone to this particular location? Has a really interesting story here. But what are we adding to the conversation? What are we providing new, other than this location has been visited by 1,000 different organizations and groups and psychics and mediums, etc. What are we actually doing different? Are we recording anything different? What are we adding? Are we adding any value to this? And as I started to ask the members of our group that kind of those kind of questions, and okay, can we forward this? Is there an organization that actually is vetting this? Is there any people out there or any groups or societies who are actually benefiting from this information? Can we forward it to a university, whatever? Those things become very closed off, and the conversation suddenly changed to being, I don't want to discuss them things. I just want to have my little group. I mean, did you find that with some of the people you spoke to as well?
Absolutely. There is going to be a number of people who do well to start. People are involved in the paranormal or these groups for an enormous variety of reasons. Many times they've had their own experiences, but sometimes they're just interested in it. And some of them are there just to reinforce that belief. And others are there because they want to know what's going on. And so they have a more critical take on it, and they start asking the questions, and they do evolve in their learning and their understanding. The people who just want to believe are there for a different reason, and they're just going to keep reinforcing that belief, and they don't want to be challenged. So I did find when I was researching the variety and the number of groups here in the United States that do these paranormal amateur investigation that often they don't want to be challenged, and they don't want anybody who's critical of them or asking questions at all because they're their own little group. They're their own little set. They kind of have their own rules. And while they pick and choose from the media and other groups what they want to incorporate in their process, they don't want anybody telling them that they're doing anything wrong. And I think that's one of the things that gets people into these groups because there's no barrier. If you're interested, you can join. You don't have to have any qualifications. You don't have to have a scientific degree. You could just go there because you're interested and just help out. And again, that's an important part of our culture. These groups are, there's thousands of them
There really is, and
around. Yeah.
you mentioned something there quite interesting about like you don't have to have any qualifications or any knowledge going into this. You can just join a group ad hoc, as it were, and you can come in with your preset of beliefs and you'll add to the melting pot. And I guess the idea of not being challenged, you know what comes to mind there is like the growing number of Flat Earth Society believers and how that's changed quite a bit, and that's gaining a lot of traction. And to watch that, I'd say on the words of social media, develop. And I just saw like on Netflix this morning, there's a movie like special on there, and it's like, what is going on?
Yeah. These things are complicated. Cultural things are complicated. I think the flat earth idea really feeds on the idea of anti-authority. We
Yes.
don't need authority to, we don't trust authority, the government, scientist, whoever. And that does also come into play in other similar paranormal themes where the scientists aren't listening to us. We have to go out and do this. We have to prove,
We have
for
to
example, we
prove
have
the
to prove
ghost there.
Bigfoot exists. We have to do it. We're going to be the ones to do it. They all feel that way. They don't really understand that's not how it works. One group doesn't prove it. One photo, one video can't do it. You need to have a collective consensus and understanding to move forward. And that's what I found that these groups, these investigators pretended to do science. They did
Yeah,
sciencey
it's
things.
sciencey things, that's right. Not quite science,
Yeah.
but sciencey sounding words.
Exactly. But they miss the core of science, which is, a bigger consensus. It's testing, it's developing your theories and testing them and trying different hypotheses and working things out and getting everybody on the same page and coming to an idea of what's actually going on there.
Yeah, because I do think with some things, there appears to be something that's actually going on, and maybe there is enough anecdotal evidence to say that something strange is happening in this particular area. Maybe
Let's take a look. Yeah.
we should go and find out and see if there actually is anything. And I think when you realize potentially there's not nothing happening there, maybe, and then you kind of want to reinforce the belief that something is, and you there's that feeding of that. But I think the Bigfoot hunters is quite an interesting one. I guess in the UK we don't really have Bigfoot around. There was a monkey back in the 70s that got escaped from a zoo and they lived life on the canals for a little bit, which people thought was some kind of Bigfoot character, but that's a story in itself. But I guess in America, the Bigfoot is a really powerful part of your culture now, really.
It is.
The part of like the American Desert Northwest, it's relatively unexplored forestry area, which I guess if there is some kind of upright ape primal might actually exist potentially, but I don't know. I don't think there's enough that says it does exist. But some of the reports are interesting. But when you've got bears walking around that are appropriately the same size, and you have large wolves, big cats walking around, anything that kind of has an interesting sound can instantly be attributed to like a Bigfoot-like character or a cryptid of some kind. But I was on a radio show at 2008 as a guest, actually, for White Noise Paranormal Radio, and there was a cryptozoologist who was the other guest on the show. And he said something really interesting that's always resonated with me. And he says, most people have never even seen a badger or a deer. Heck, how can they even identify something they've never seen before if they've never seen something that's actually a really common animal?
Yeah, I think that in the US, a lot of us, especially us living on the East Coast where it's more densely populated, we've lost touch with nature. We don't know what nature is anymore. You know, nature is something we have to travel to see. And there was a recent story, probably about a year or two ago, where people in New York City mistook a raccoon for a tiger. How could you do that?
They're
So
pretty different.
that's really different. So I enjoy seeing the news stories of weird animals that people spot, you know, even roadkill or wash up on the shore. And they never seem to ask experts what they are. They just assume they're a mutant, an alien, a hybrid, a monster.
Oh yeah,
It's like
the Montauk Monster and stuff, yeah.
it's just a dead animal that's been exposed to the elements and is, you know,
It's lost it.
decomposing.
Yeah, it's
And
lost its
people
fur, yeah.
have no idea what that is.
That's another interesting point, is that people don't see death like that anymore. We don't
No,
see
exactly.
decomposing. That happens in the back of hospitals and morgues and so on, mortuaries. It's true. We don't see our dead do that, or anybody, animals. But so when
And
you,
if you're out, yeah, if you're out in nature and you're not used to it,
yeah.
and you hear noises and you see things that, you know, shadows or you know, just things that go by you don't recognize, it's unnerving. And our culture does teach us that there are weird things out in the woods. And right now, the culture is very heavy on Bigfoot is out there. Really, we're trying to convince you it's out there. And that really plays into what people's interpretation of what they see.
Yeah, well, I was also thinking there about where pareidolia comes into it, apophenia, where you recognize features and faces and shapes and body shapes that will throw you off and it'll make you think you're seeing something. When you're out in the woods with very little light, everything casts a really unique shadow. If you're not used to it, trees will just look like characters and figures with long, spindling fingers and so on. Where I live, so my bedroom is kind of in the room opposite from here, and I walk through my bathroom, and every night I walk past my coats that are hanging in the corridor, and every time it gets me, every time there's someone there. No, it's my coat, and as much as I know it's my coat, it gets me that there's someone there.
Sure. Yeah, right.
So when
When I
you
was a kid, there was a big tree behind our house. It was like two pine trees together, very tall and narrow. Looked like a Bigfoot walking away. And I
I love
loved that
that
image
image
of
of
that
that
way
way
up
up
on
on
the
the
hill.
hill.
I
I knew
knew that
that
it
it
wasn't
wasn't
a
a
Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
I
I
knew
knew
it
it
was
was
a
a
tree,
tree,
but
but
it
it
just
just
reminded
reminded
me
me
of
of
it
it
every
every
single
single
time
time
I
I
saw
saw
it.
it.
It's great. It really is. When we kind of understand the magic of it as well, that kind of the illusion
Yeah.
that happens, and
Right.
yeah, and that keeps us. What's the word for it? Keeps us reasoned. We're going up.
Yeah.
No. It runs away from us from there. So I'm really interested. Do you have much of a really deep understanding of what the other cryptids and cryptozoology is happening in the world right now? Because I guess Bigfoot is probably the number one alpha one everyone talks about. But of course, there's quite a few, isn't there? There's the various lake monsters. I guess the coelacanth is the one that gets repeated the most often.
Yeah, that's I call that a red herring. I call that the cryptozoological red herring in the coelacanth because they love to trot that out,
They do.
and it's really not a cryptid. I mean, the problem with some of these fields, especially cryptozoology, is that they haven't defined their terms, and they tend to just pick and choose which things reinforce their ideas. And I don't think that the coelacanth is a cryptid, like Bigfoot or lake monsters or
It's
things like that,
because
because
the way that the coelacanth is explained, it's explained as being it was here in the fossil record, and then it disappeared for 70 million years. We don't know where it's gone. Now it's back, and it appears to be quite relevant all around the world. It's quite a few different places where it's at. So it's just that it wasn't in the fossil record. What we found, they're deep water fish. Yeah, they don't tend to come up near the surface, and they appear to have a lot of oil within their body. So they would actually decompose rather quickly in the bottom. So we don't really have much of a backlog, as it were, of their remains to know where they weren't in the fossil record. We just know we had one, and then there was nothing after that. But yeah, to throw it straight as like a this is a miracle of cryptozoology, look what we've discovered, is
Not
it
really.
baffles me every time I hear that thrown out there.
Actually, there have been fossil remains from coelacanths from the time where we thought that they were extinct until the present. It's just that they weren't recognized. They weren't identified correctly. They were shoved in boxes and nobody looked for them because, oh, coelacanth's extinct. This must be something else. I don't have time to identify what it is, so let's put it to the side there. And the fact that it may have been known to the locals, as oh, we get this big, fish that occasionally we pull up and we don't like it because it's smelly and it's not good for eating, so we throw it back. And that is an aspect of cryptozoology that's called being ethno-known. So it's known to the locals. And they use that in other stories as well, where there's this animal that people describe that's being there, and we can't explain what that is, or it doesn't relate to any animals that we know. It must be a cryptid. Well, there's a leap that many cryptozoologists make with regards to the local culture and how they explain things versus how we would try to explain it scientifically. And what the local culture may explain, especially that's used a lot in the US with indigenous people, the Native Americans. Oh, well, the natives believe that there was this giant hairy monster man-like thing that was part of their culture. So that's Bigfoot. It doesn't work that way. It could
No.
be just a spiritual animal. It could be a spiritual creature. It could just be an idea. Are we going to believe in fairies and leprechauns and things like that in the woods too? They're powerful ideas, but it doesn't mean that they're actually real things.
You know, when you said fairies, I've got to tell you a funny story. So there was this. So it's about 8 years ago, right? So I'm at work and doing a tour in the city centre. I live in Nottingham, you see. So I used to do a history, myths, and urban legends tour through the city, and I had this lady come over, and she was telling me that she has fairies sit on her bike on the way to work. So I'm like, okay. I wasn't dismissive of what she said, because of course there can be mental issues of what she is saying. So I allowed her to digress what it was she was talking about. So she says that she has fairies, and they sit on her bike on the handlebars when she goes to work, and they sit around her house at home. And I'm like, okay, so what is it you guys talk about? And she says, we talk about love and light. And I'm like, is that it? Do you just say the word love and light? What's their society like? Do they have a hierarchy system? Do they have a matriarchy system? Is it a social system? Do they have bartering? How do they work with each other? And she goes, no, they just they make things for each other. I was like, okay, so it's a bit like I make you something, you make me something. So do they have a form of currency? Do they have what's their are they interested in higher subjects? Do they have a science division? Do they have history and literature? Do they have a written language? And you can see that these questions are the kind of things that you would talk about if you had beings sat on your handlebar about what their life's like and what they do and what they get up to, what's their beliefs and so on. It was just so profound to her that someone would ask those quite sensible questions of a lady who says that I see fairies everywhere, and they give me joy, and they give me comfort, and they tell me love and light. And it's like, well, are you sure, mate? If they are sitting around your bedroom and they're looking at you at night, as you're telling me they are, you should ask them what they are actually doing there, and what do they want from you. And I've kind of always come I've always kind of used that as a go back to point. So what was it that she was saying that she would not ask them the questions that she tells me to talk to all the time? So was that person ever making it up? Did she see those things? Is there a mental issue there? Is there a mix of chemistry going on in the head? Perhaps isn't seeing the right thing. Is she having a hallucinogenic experience? Is it a schizophrenic experience where they see things that are external to the body? Or is she generally seeing things that are sat around? But if so, what are you talking to them about? And you slowly see their fantasy sometimes come apart before them, and you don't want to cause them damage because it's I guess it's not right for us to do that, or anyone. But unless someone asks those questions of them, that delusion will hold perhaps for their entire life.
people are complicated, and we really underestimate how complicated things are. And can you ever say that you know what it is? What bugs me is when paranormalists say, "We've got a ghost." Have you completely gone through every single possibility? No, because we can't possibly know every possibility. And but yet they say, "Well, it's paranormal."
Yeah,
You
they
can't do that.
no, they haven't ruled out what it can't be first. Is there a light?
Yes.
Is there a light in the room? Is there? Yes, I think there was a UFO kind of video that's gone viral at the moment of it looks like it's shot through the windscreen of a Land Rover. It's the light's on the
Yes.
left-hand side of the screen. It looks like the vehicle's backing up and therefore the light is projecting around. And
Absolutely. Yep.
everyone's going, oh, it's some kind of a fantastic UFO craft. And it's like, no, it looks like a light reflection through some water on the old dashboard, and the camera looks a bit jerky as it is. But
Sure.
I was seeing that being repeated in national press, and I'm going, where are these journalists coming in with their critical view and their reason point? Because I think I should a journalist not be there to go, well, actually, what is it not and what is it before we start jumping? It is a UFO. No, it's not.
Yeah, for 7 years I did the website Doubtful News, and what I did was pull these types of stories from the major media, or sometimes just reputable people would be telling these stories. And based on what I knew from the history, or from my friends who would say, "Yeah, that's not what they say it is," or "We can look at this video and see what it is," I was able to put these stories out on my website saying, "It's not this, it's probably this." Or, "We don't know what it is, but this fact that they're saying is wrong." And what I found that was many of these tabloids, mostly where these things come out, but also get picked up by major news sources just for advertising revenue. They just love that people click on them. People are so interested. They want to see what the
You're
story is about. They want to give their opinion
That's
on what
right.
it is, which is really interesting. "Well, I don't think it's this, it's this. It's
No.
definitely this. And you guys are all stupid because it's clearly this." And it was a way to participate in this mystery solving they thought that they were doing, but it's really just clickbait.
No,
People
you're
just kept clicking on the site.
it's true. It's and they want to share it. And that's why you find there's a lot of they look like websites. I think they're computer. I think they're AI created or algorithm generated, where it's a whole page. They looks like they've snipped literally a sentence from a news source, and it's surrounded by adverts. And they're the pages that get shared on social media rather than the actual news source themselves. And sometimes you have
That's
to go,
right.
I'm not going to click on ES, well, this news source here. I'm going to go to the actual news source myself, and it's awful. And you realize there's actually
It
not
is.
much content within there. And it's like, oh. If you need to find the next picture or the next, then you press right and it'll reload a page again full of adverts, and they get clickbait from the impressions being shown. I like you said, I think that's how a lot of journalism, a lot of Twitter is these days. It's please come to my site. I've got this opinion to say, but I need you to come to my site so I get paid for my revenue, rather than the
Yeah, it
actual
was very
news.
frustrating.
Very, very, very shallow. Very shallow. When they literally just will copy and paste one paragraph or even just a sentence from somewhere else. It's like, come on, you haven't even linked it to where you got the source from. It's terrible.
I used to have people just scrape my entire stories from my site and put them up on their sites.
Yeah.
Sometimes even with my copyright notice at the bottom, they just didn't care. They just printed the whole thing. And it was surrounded by ads, and people would share those stories. Like you said, when I find a story like that, I constantly have to go and click through each one of the links that they have, or I will take the keywords and I will Google the keywords to find all the sources and see how much they match and how much they're just pasted into other places, which it's huge. I'm not sure that there's much journalism being done at all anymore. These are sensational stories. They know their people are going to click on them. They just post them without any thought whatsoever. And
Yeah,
that's why I started the website. But
and there's a huge loss in critical thinking. Or just like, I think we all like to read something silly that's a bit of fun.
Fun, yeah.
You scroll down Facebook or you look down your Twitter feed or you're rolling through your news feeds that are coming through. I mean, it's quite obvious to some that what's an ad and what's a news story. And the news stories, again, are just. They're a clickbait headline. You must click this. This is really interesting. 10 things you can do today. I'll have a look at that. And you come away from it going, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Why did I do
Or you go down the rabbit hole either there or on YouTube because you've clicked on the next
that?
thing.
It's
Oh,
true.
it's terrible.
We've all done it. But so
Why don't do we read books anymore? I don't know. I mean, I wish people did read more books.
I think I've got books. But no, so do you think then paranormal like acceptance is a belief that's now a majority? Because I think I saw that as a story the other day. It's like I didn't follow through in data. But paranormal belief is now an accepted majority. Is that across America in general?
I think it's across America. It's also a lot of European countries are exhibiting the same. And in fact, this is done by Chapman University. They do a poll every year, and they ask people about paranormal belief in different subjects. So ghosts, psychics, UFOs, aliens visiting the planet, things like that. And it's going up in general. Everything is sort of going up. There are some that are more than others. Ancient alien beliefs are huge now. People believe that there are lost continents like Atlantis and things like that. Clearly, that's a media influence. These TV shows, these media products are pushing that agenda, and people are seeing it on TV and saying, oh, there must be something to it. But in general, the idea of the enchanted world, the world is more than what we see or the materialistic things that we see, is that belief is growing because maybe people are lacking something. Maybe they're, the Orthodox religion is going down and people aren't so much religious anymore, but they're inventing their own ideas of spiritualism.
Yeah, because
And
I
they're
was.
moving into more new age things and things like that.
I think there's also another transition that's occurring as well. And it's one that's quite prevalent on TV and on media, is superheroes, powerful, powerful storytelling medium. I think comic books tell a fantastic story. Now we've got to the level of technology that you can replicate that on screen and have it look realistic enough that it tricks your mind to think it actually could be real. When those superhero shows, and as amazing as some of them are, they all talk about different dimensions and aliens and superpowers that potentially the normal person could have. Now the lay person could be a superhero. Again, that's the same kind of belief structure you're feeding into a lot of people, that the idea of hidden agendas and secret societies and government corruption and the police state might be corrupt as well. And then you have to be an individual superhero is off and on his own and he's a little bit of a loner and doesn't have many friends, but the friends are also eclectically a bit weird as well. They couldn't get together to fight back the evil enemy, and I think that's a powerful narrative in it in and of itself that is replicated repeatedly. And you look at how say I actually use like I actually use well like Disney or whatever Marvel and DC are putting out. That is the narrative that most people, teenagers wise, really look up to. In the same way that people look at Buffy and people looked at like Charmed back in the day, where there was a whole like Wiccan phase where everyone became a witch and a vampire hunter and stuff. And then everyone's now a superhero, and there's a really interesting like media narrative about that.
If you really look, there's some incredible threads through that, where you can find out how it reflects our cultural space and time. What are we afraid of right now, and what do we need from an alternative view of the world? And those things become popular. I don't know why there were all these ghost shows that came up in the 2000s. It was just an explosion of
Oh
these TV
man,
shows.
some were awful.
They were terrible. None of them were any good.
No.
And then there were some even UFO shows. Well, you can't really get much worse than a UFO TV show because UFOs just make terrible TV subjects.
We're gonna
They're just
stand.
not there. I mean, you gotta have people looking up at the sky. It's boring.
Yeah.
But the Bigfoot shows, they became also extremely popular. And I heard many people tell me, well, I don't watch those because I believe in it. I watch them because they're funny, or we laugh at them, or it's a joke. Or people did watch them because they eventually picked up a belief in them. They said, oh, well, they're really finding evidence there. So there must be something there. So it's kind of interesting. There hasn't been a lot of research on this, of why people watch paranormal themed TV shows, which are reality TV shows, not fiction, and what they get out of them. Do they go there because they have a pre-existing belief, or do they get a belief because they watch them? There hasn't been much
No,
research done on that.
that's a really interesting thought to have, isn't it? I was going to say, so in the UK, we had a quite famous show called Most Haunted that it's still on today,
Yes.
actually. I kind of watched it. Many of my friends have worked on that show, and it's interesting to have watched it from an outsider's perspective. How the narrative changed from being quite an interesting. We're going to go into this location and just do like a general investigation. It kind of set the precedent for TV, how they're presented. But then there was a narrative that kind of thrown into that, where it went from being ghosts to being poltergeists to being demonic witches, and it suddenly became demons are chasing the main stars. And how do you top this for the next show? How do you get the person to watch the next show? And the next season's going to have a bigger budget, so we're going to have a threat of a common enemy. Is that the same for shows that perhaps you've watched, like Stateside? You know, where there has to be, the narrative has to evolve. There has to almost be an arc to keep people gripped to the end of the series, as opposed to presenting, well, actually, there's something quite interesting here. It's a nice big spooky castle. Let's see, what there's some history about this place. We can talk about the stories that are here. Doesn't mean there's anything here, but we'll walk around and we'll film it and see what you think. I think there's a very different how you present that to being, it's demons.
Yeah, the demon thing was quite shocking. Although it happened, probably it was introduced with the idea of, there was a show called Paranormal State, which was a group of college kids that were working actually in Pennsylvania. And they brought in, the person on the show was Catholic. So yeah, you bring in that baggage that you have of religion. And then they would bring in Lorraine Warren as a consultant. And of course, the Warrens saw demons and everything. Demons were everywhere. And they were active in the late 60s and into the 70s. And it's amazing that they carried through right today. There was this lull where we were treating paranormal as like parapsychology and something more scientific. And now we're back to all the supernatural aspects of it. I'm not sure why, but yeah, the demons are huge. And even the ideas of Satan and is in manifesting in TV shows and media today for kids. So yeah, these things come in waves.
It's true. There's like a rich source of like psychology and sociology that can be investigated there.
One thing about Most Haunted, there's a couple papers analyzing Most Haunted because it was such a unique show.
Oh, I should go and check those out, actually. So it's such a powerful storytelling medium, I think, because you can present a fiction narrative through what appears to be a factual TV show.
A good example of that was Ghost Watch.
Ghost Watch, yeah. I mean, Stephen Volk is a contact I have on Facebook and talks to you quite frequently. He obviously wrote that show, and he always, whenever anyone posts something about it, he always shares it out and goes, "It's interesting the cultural narrative that's stuck into that." I can remember watching that live at about, I think I was about 13 years old, and I can remember watching that and going,
really?
That was powerful. And I didn't quite get it at the time. I don't even think I actually watched the ending when the show originally aired. It wasn't until I watched it later on. And how it was like a huge bust afterwards, and everyone was upset, and some people thought it was like a live seance happening on TV. And it really pushed a lot of buttons. I can remember the conversations happening, and I was only a teenager. I can remember going past that newsstands and start seeing Ghostwatch on there. And how that's changed. But actually, it found itself woven into to watching Most Haunted. I found like I was watching that Ghostwatch play out over the course of 10, 15 seasons.
It set the template. It really did.
Yeah, he did an amazing job. And he went on to write many other things as well. Like, Afterlife, I thought, was really good of his one of his things. And he's got another show coming called Winstable, one of his books. That's getting produced into a TV show. But man, so what do you think? How do people change that? How do they apply reason, perhaps, in the most easiest of way? And what do you think? So what's the solution for all of this kind of paranormal rhetoric? What's the how do people apply reason quickly?
I don't know. I mean, you're always going to have a portion of the population. When we're talking about the percentage of belief, there's always been a very high percentage of belief, I think. It hasn't really gone down. You can always get 20% of your respondents to say something completely outrageous in a poll. Yeah. Really extreme. But for the most part, people are like, well, it might be fun to believe in this, or I do believe in it because I've had an experience. I don't know that they're too willing to give that up, really, or they want to think about it. People like me, I try to find out what's really going on here, and it seems that that's kind of rare.
Yeah.
I think, most people don't really want to know the details of what's going on. They just want to have more fun with it, and it serves their personal purpose. I do think that we're at a really low at critical thinking in society. We're so used to the media feeding us what we need to know today, or telling us what to think, that we've lost the ability to think for ourselves.
Do you think because people have watched the news and watched it now spin as many stories as it could possibly be the case, and everyone is sick of seeing clickbait. Everyone's sick of news that has no substance. So, I mean, obviously in the UK you have like quite what puts itself across as investigative journalism, newspapers like The Guardian, like The Times, etc. But you'll find they're the ones who perhaps put the most, I'd hate to use the term fake news, but news that has no substance out. It'll be like, look at how many balloons we can hold on the side of this. That's not important. Give me some news that is real. And you'll find, Joe Rogan was talking about the other day on his podcast, how Twitter is the news now. So now, and that there's certain journalists who work in certain fields, they only have their friends or their news type of network, so they are only kind of tweeting to each other, so it's reinforcing the narrative that is the news, as opposed to them actually analysing what is the real news, what's really happening out there, what's really happening on the streets of like Newcastle. Is there really why is there such low unemployment but everyone doesn't have any money? How does that work? Is it 0-hour contracts? No one's asking important questions anymore. Because it's as much fluff in the media as possible to stop people asking questions. I think people are just tired of it, that they don't interact with the news anymore.
No, we don't. We don't have a quiet. We're so bombarded with this information all day long.
Yeah.
And it's even sometimes hard to turn it off at night to go to sleep. Do we ever stop and have quiet time and think about things or do these deep dives into these questions, because they're very complicated and they don't have simple answers? It seems like we always want those simple answers, but it takes time to think through these things.
It's true. I joke that I have 10 steps to a new life. Everyone wants the quick how do I get myself fixed routine.
Yeah. Or how do I fix society? Oh, this person promises that they can fix things
Let's just build a wall.
Yeah, exactly. Or just that's a signature.
That's a really prime example, isn't it? Now he's going to follow through with something like that. In practical terms, they're very difficult, but in terms of a slogan, amazing.
Yeah, no context there. No. I mean, it's just like, we're just going to do this. Well, what does the data show that the actual problem is? What will fix the actual problem? How much money will this cost? Is it worth the money? There's so much that goes into thinking about these things. Nobody thinks about these problems anymore. Or at least we don't see them doing that.
No.
We see the very shallow answer thrown out.
Yeah, I think the social media has changed the way that matters are discussed now. Everyone can put an opinion out there very easily, very quickly, and through the melting pot of the internet, can get even the most silliest idea can get shouted up to the top of the pile quite quickly, which then it has to be responded to in a way. And often, it is of so little substance. Unfortunately, there's a lot of voices shouting about it that it has to be enforced or regulated or put through, often just to shut it up.
I'm really scared with social media these days, because it seems to be doing more harm than good. I mean, I know it has great good, where people are able to communicate across the world all these ideas and reach, the entire planet with these ideas and what's going on. But on the other hand, we're overwhelmed with these horrible voices that are just drowning out any reason.
Yeah, there's a reason is the hardest thing to get through to some people.
You can't do it in Twitter. I mean, it's this big. I mean, it's not that much room.
So it's 200 characters these days. Can you communicate an idea?
You can't.
I think it's an interesting idea, though, to simplify an idea to 140 or 260 characters.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's profoundly psychologically interesting of how you can take a sentence. Because I've sat there, I've wrote something, and I've gone, I've got to change this run. How do I keep the same context, but it means the same thing? You can have fun with that. But I think when you start... when that's the only way you're communicating to the world, and if you've got teenagers or whatever, you look at their messages, how they talk to each other, and you realize they communicate in one-word sentences or words. It's like the language is breaking down because of having to shorten things and make things simple for everyone. And when you realize that, say, like at university and at colleges, things are qualifications are made simpler because there's a low pass rate. Let's diversify that. Let's make the paper slightly simpler. Is the IQ and the rationale of what the end product would be, they're not quite as smart as they should be anymore. But we tend to have given them a piece of paper, what says they are. And I think that's a dangerous precedent as well.
Right. I hope that they're smarter in new ways. I hope that the generation coming up, I mean, I have two kids. They're not little. I mean, one's 20 and one's 15. So I see them smart in different ways than me. They don't read books, but they're savvy in other ways that I wasn't. So it's interesting to see that evolution in our culture.
Yes, it is. If you were a person who saw a ghost or saw a UFO, how do you tell them that's not what it is, but this is what it might be? What's the easiest way to explain that, do you think?
I'm not real good at that.
No.
And people write to me with their stories a lot, and they say, like you said, I'm going to tell you my story. Tell me what happened, or what do you think it is? I wasn't there. This is your experience. I wasn't there. It went through your lens of life experience and your perception, and I can't possibly comment on it. And I've pulled away from that. I think when I was younger, I tried to do that. Oh, it was probably this. It was probably that. And I realized that that was not a good way to do things. And I don't think it helped people to do that.
No.
And it certainly wasn't correct because I had no idea what it was. So I don't really like people to tell me their stories and then say, well, what do you think it is? I don't even much like anymore when people give me photographs or pieces of
Tell
evidence
me
and
what
say, what
this
do you think
is.
this is?
I have no idea.
I don't know because the context is so broad what it could be. I think people tell me these things and I nod and I try to be sympathetic because I realize that it's been a powerful experience for them. And I'm still learning to ask those right questions on how to progress the conversation a little bit. I've been through a couple, I think I kind of think of it as like a pendulum in the way my belief has swung. I was used to be a believer, then I was a very total skeptic, and now the pendulum keeps swinging back and forth, but is slowly settling to the middle where it's like, I'm not sure I'd really, want to make a conclusion about it at all. I'm fine with saying I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really nice place to put yourself, isn't it? I don't know. We can talk about it, but I have an interest in it. But actually, I don't think there's an expert who can give you the answer that you would be satisfied with. So that's the question. That's the answer I put to you is I can't give you an answer. Can you accept I don't know?
Yeah, that's
That's
interesting,
interesting.
but I don't know.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then what
Not
about
many people are comfortable with that, though, because they want an
The
answer.
absolute, this person, this has been holding on to me now for 10 years. How do I move on from it? Well, it's one of those things. Sorry.
Yeah.
So
Just
there.
accept it as your experience and move on.
Oh man, there was something I was going to run by you actually. There was a news article I think came out yesterday. It was actually about Amelia Earhart, possibly the most famous female pilot, and she's the most used trope I think for disappearing people.
Absolutely,
And
yes.
I've always seen it. I've gone, but I'm sure they actually found her diary like 60 years ago, and they found a number of objects on an island, and they never found her body, admittedly. And it's come out they've now recent. I think it's the U.S. Aviation Recovery Authority has now believed to have found her plane. They've dived down there. They've seen they found her plane, and but for so many years this has been used as like she went through the Bermuda Triangle or the Devil's Triangle. She was kidnapped by aliens, and I think that all now disappear. And then I saw a meme this morning that was about how interesting is it that no one disappears in the Bermuda Triangle anymore? And I was like, actually, have these things moved on? So have we moved on from Amelia Earhart having like alien abduction problems and the Bermuda Triangle no longer being something that sucks and makes ships disappear and stuff? Have we now moved on from those mysteries that we
Well,
now.
I would hope that maybe people have finally come to the conclusion that, well, maybe there really isn't anything going on there. I still think they do come in waves. Why is flat Earth coming up again? It's just strange things that do come in waves because they work at the moment, I guess. Not too long ago, they said there was evidence that came out, and it was shown on a TV show that Amelia Earhart was captured by the Japanese, and there was
Okay.
a picture that showed that she had been seen in off the in a harbor in Japan.
Okay.
That was it was a terrible picture. Clearly, wasn't her, and the place and the time was completely wrong. But yet, no work was done to verify this, and that's the story that people got, that, oh, Amelia Earhart was seen here, and
Yeah.
they didn't get the follow-up story. I'm hoping that maybe for the internet age, people are curious about these subjects and actually go online and look and see more of the story than just the believer aspect.
Yeah.
There's sometimes like Wikipedia articles are pretty balanced.
They are, yeah. I don't know how Wikipedia gets a bit of a bad press, really. But generally, it's sourced at the bottom. You don't have to, you could read the person who's wrote the facts above into a statement or a paragraph, but actually you can go to the bottom and go check out the sources yourself. And I would
Yeah, so
encourage
if
that.
you, yeah, if you're really interested, you can get the fuller story.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to condense it all yourself to process it, as opposed to reading someone else's work there. So yeah, it's really interesting the way the internet works. The hive mind, or the fact that you really people these days have access to so much information. That I think that's perhaps where it goes wrong. We're so bombarded with so much information. I don't think our human minds can comprehend how much we've actually got in a palm of our hand in our phone, or when we got
Right.
PCs and everything around. There's so much information being thrown our way that I think it's overwhelming for many people. I think people now have more anxiety about what they're going to read on the news or what in their phone than at any time in history, because you have everything.
I agree. I know I do.
Yeah.
I feel like I constantly I can't keep up. I can't keep up. Even for like if I pick one topic, I feel that I can't possibly get everything on that topic, and analyze it. And digest it to the point where I could tell you that I'm some kind of expert. I never feel that way. I
No.
feel that there's always too much out there that I haven't yet explored or haven't read or haven't thought about.
It's true, it really is that there's so much out there that it's just almost too much for everybody. And
Do you ever see that like the Dunning that Dunning-Kruger curve
how was that?
about knowledge and confidence? So when you first find out about something and you do like a quick search on it and you know maybe just Google it and all of a sudden your knowledge, your thinking of knowledge it goes way up. You're confident that you know so much about the subject
Okay.
and then you start reading more and more about it and your confidence and understanding starts to trend downward, downward until you get to a point where you're like, I am never going to understand this at all. And your confidence in what you know is lost because you realize that it's so much bigger than you first suspected.
No, that's a really interesting observation that's been made. And I guess perhaps we've all perhaps been guilty of at some point we've gone, okay, I'm going to go find this out because. Isn't it like Socrates? What if we wrote everything down, we would not be committing as much to memory anymore. So the fact that we say that we're knowledgeable, we know certain stuff, is that because we know we can go and Google and find the answer, even though we actually don't know it ourselves? So it's not even written
That's
down
a
anymore. It's in the ether.
it's a skill
Yeah.
that you know where to go to find information. And I think that teaching kids these days how to sort through all this information is a skill that maybe we didn't need when we were growing up because there was more of limited
Yeah.
options of sources to use. Now they've got everything and they need to know how to sort through what's good and bad.
Yeah, and there's a lot out there of all sides, and everyone's like, everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got a voice, everyone's got their view on how it is, and everyone can now self-publish, everyone can write a blog, everyone can write. And you're just like, damn, how do I find an actual story and nugget in there? Even if I just wanted to search and just discuss, I don't know, Roswell, for instance. Meh, I'm not even
Oh
gonna.
my gosh,
Not
I
even gonna,
know.
not, wouldn't even try. Wouldn't even try.
And the day today you can self-publish your own book
Yeah.
like that. And I've gone through a couple to go back to the paranormal theme, paranormal self-published books. They're so awful. They're just waste of paper, so many of them. It's rare that I find one that's actually worth reading, but yet these books get passed along to each other. Said, well, I'm an expert. I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Well, my book took 7 years to write. It takes a very, very long time to do good work,
It
but
does,
it's
yeah.
so easy to do bad work. You could just throw it out there, and people throw out these books several a year, and they're just not all that good.
No, and what's inside them, it's just, was it, like you said, it wasn't worth the paper it's printed on if you got a printed version at all. Yeah, I've never actually owned a really bad paranormal book. So I guess I've always picked and choose the ones I've bought.
That's good.
I have done for a long time. I guess I know the people. I will literally go and approach them directly and go, why would I want to buy your book? Tell me about what's inside. What's the worth of it? And you have that conversation. And you go, maybe I'll put that one to the side, but I'll buy this one instead. But there's nothing wrong with a good book out there. There's plenty of books on the paranormal that are actually really good, or resource articles and magazines and so on.
Absolutely.
I've had quite a few articles myself published in Paranormal Magazine and Supernatural Magazine, but yeah, there's so much to get through, and I think for people jumping on board, have you just watched your first sightings program, or you've just started watching Beyond Belief, or you listened to Coast to Coast for the first time, for many people, where do they start? You know, would their recommendation would be to go to SharonAHill.com instead?
I've actually stopped blogging a little bit because I had that feeling that I didn't know enough to say anything original or useful. And that's my own hang up because I probably could do it. It didn't occur to me that I thought that was useful. But
Oh mate, I'll give
there's
you a
so
high
many
five. That's my problem. That's the same position I'm in. I don't want to write about it because I don't think I'm adding anything new to the conversation.
It, like I said, it does take a lot of work to contribute something original. And a lot of these websites are just rehashing the same old stuff. And it's frustrating because you see the errors propagated as well.
Yes, you do.
And blogs are kind of dying now. I'm not getting as much traffic. People in general are not getting as much traffic to their blogs, and certainly mine. And when you put yourself out there, you get a lot of criticism too. It's very easy to sit there and criticize people if you're, your armchair critics, but come after you for sometimes really silly things. So it is hard. It is hard to put yourself out there these days as a blog. And I'm struggling right now. Do I want to write another book? I'm writing a couple of pieces for 40 in Times because I think that's a
That's
good way to
great
get.
magazine.
I love that magazine. And at a certain point, I didn't think I belong there because I was so involved in the skeptic community that they didn't see me as someone to listen to because they assumed that I was just the naysayer skeptic, the dismissive skeptic.
No, actually, I find that they do a really good job of making sure everything's verified, everything's sourced, and you know.
Absolutely. And it is not a joke publication, and there are good researched articles in there, and I just enjoy going through the pages. I read the whole thing cover to cover because
Yes,
I like the weird news, and I like the features, and I like the
yeah,
book reviews and movie
absolutely.
reviews.
So I guess when I sent you Peter Law's view, you were like, "Oh,
It
I know him."
was funny. He did tweet something one time because his piece had come out in 14 times, and mine had also been in the same issue. I did a review of Zach Bagans' Demon House documentary, and I got a little bit of bad feedback from that too. But there was one nasty letter to the editor about that.
All right.
I didn't like the documentary because I thought it was terrible and it was overdramatic and it was kind of ridiculous and I couldn't follow it. But the biggest problem I had with it is he never let anybody else at this haunted location. He closed it off and then he destroyed the house. Well, if you're really interested in paranormal research, why wouldn't you invite other people in to investigate and think about this problem? You've got this example. Why wouldn't you like to share it with people? No, he just wanted it for himself and he destroyed it. So that was my play on the article, was that I was mad. I don't know if anything really did happen in this house or not. I suspect that it didn't. But why wouldn't you open that up to the bigger community? Instead, Baggins is a paranormal celebrity and he just feels like he's just in it for himself. And the feedback I got from the article was by one person who said that I was elitist and that these amateur paranormalists are doing more than scientists are doing to discover secrets of the paranormal. And I just sat there scratching my head going, he didn't add anything to it. I don't know what this is all about because I don't see the amateurs adding a whole lot
No.
to the science of it at all.
No. I do think for a lot of people it's just a case of you can get together with your mates, you can go to a spooky house, or you can go on an organized ghost hunt at somewhere that's, well, wherever. And you get to talk about your experiences, you get to have a laugh, you get to have a drink, and a bit of a socialize, and then you go home afterwards having walked around feeling like you've discovered something, but actually you didn't, not really.
There are a few of these paranormal celebrities who love to visit universities or colleges. They get invited by clubs to do lectures, not by real professors, but by clubs to come in and do lectures. And they'll make a big deal about the fact that they have appeared at a university or they're teaching a class or something like that. And it's just sort of a it's cheating
It's
the authority. You're not really a professor. You're just there to give a talk. And They just enjoy that sense of authority that they have, and the media also treats them like experts,
Yeah.
and they get a buzz off that.
What is it? It's like, look at my authorityism. Like I've been granted this position here at the university because I clearly am the expert that everyone needs to know.
Sorry.
It's like, no,
If I'm skeptical of anything, it's expertise.
I think expert is a dangerous word to use.
It is.
It really is. In any context. So like, we've actually been talking quite comfortably for an hour now, Man, so I've really enjoyed this conversation here, Sharon, and I'd like to do it again sometime actually, if you're
Okay.
more than willing to, because I guess we've kind of cut across a whole broad section, everything from cryptozoology to the sociological and the psychological background, even geography, which I maybe that's something actually we should tap a little into a little bit before actually we go off, is that how much do you think geography and in geology of an area plays into the beliefs of people. So I don't know if you there's that place, I think it actually is in Pennsylvania, it's like the huge giant snake mound. Is that Pennsylvania? I think
It's Ohio.
Ohio. So a lot of
Serpent
people,
Mound.
yeah, that's right, so a lot of people ascribe that to being ancient aliens and so on. So when potentially it was built just because it looks like a snake. Could be an art big art project.
It has a lot, I think it does play a lot to do with it. Geology, and I started looking at this because I did see some common themes showing up, and especially things like mysterious places. This place is spiritual or special.
Oh,
Let's
that's right.
use the example of Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Oh, what is that?
It was a key symbol of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie.
Of course, yeah. It's coming to me now, yeah.
And that is a real place, and it's a bizarre formation, and it just stands out, and you can't be there. I haven't visited it, but you can't look at it and say it's not a powerful thing. It's not an incredible natural phenomenon that affects people and say, how did this possibly occur? And I started thinking about that, and really, it's all geological. I mean, it's a completely natural geologic phenomenon. It had nothing to do with people, but people imposed their beliefs and their reactions on it and took away from it. And I found that fascinating. So I started looking into places that were other places that had a devil name to them, and found that they were all geologically interesting.
Okay.
What really got me into things, into this subject area, was the idea of the stone tape, where the geology somehow records an emotional event, and then that gets played back as a ghost,
Yeah, it's quite a
something like that.
fascinating concept, isn't it? That somehow the natural environment would somehow record emotions or of an event that somehow, if the, I don't know, if the sun rises at the right time and the moon's in the right place and it's rained okay, somehow it will trigger the recording to replay. I
Yes.
think it's, in itself, it's quite a fascinating just jump of logic and belief in there. I guess when we're talking about Gettysburg earlier, some places really do hold some kind of solemn feeling because you know it happened there. But if you were just walking across this field and didn't know it was there, would you feel the same way? Well, maybe not because you wouldn't didn't know. It's only because people are holding a belief that there's something is happening there. And there's quite a few places in the UK that are like that too, like Stonehenge and so on, near
Absolutely,
Grange,
yeah.
that people have projected that it's the Druids built this, or it's the Romans built this, or the pagans from thousands of years ago, or the ancient aliens built it, giants from the Wales built this. They project what it is it's going to be there. It's certainly not, certainly these weren't natural, and they were put up, and it does stand the test of time. It does look pretty miraculous, but
Yeah.
who knows what it was, what their intention was behind building it. Whether it was built in 4 days or 20 years or who knows.
Right. One of the subjects I researched extensively was ley lines,
Yeah.
which began the idea began in the UK and in Britain, and a fascinating subject of what it started out being and then what it turned
Yeah, it
into.
looks like, that's an interesting thing, 'cause it looks like the author itself didn't know what he discovered. He well
Yes.
in like the old dirt tracks, it's like, well, I found there's a number of churches that appear to line up correctly across the geographical lines of the country. And then he started mapping them even further. And he himself was a bit like, I don't know why this is the case, because it goes across rivers, it goes across bogs. There's no practical reason why they should be in a straight line. And I don't really know. Because I think I have the first book of that. And I know we did a second one. But it looked like he never projected what it was, other than going, it's really interesting that these are occurring. And there's a whole belief that these they're energy lines and UFOs use them as flight paths. And it's like,
Yes.
what the.
Yes. It was incredible because many, many years ago, I was at a paranormal conference and a ghost investigator found out I was a geologist and said, "Oh, what do you think about ley lines?" And I'm like, "I didn't know ley lines had anything to do with the paranormal." He says, "Oh yeah, that's what we're looking at, that these lines of energy also enhance paranormal energy." And I said, "I'm going to go back and look at that." So while I was researching it, the last Ghostbusters movie came out with the all female team, and the
Okay.
premise of that movie was ley lines.
Yeah, I didn't
And
know
I
that.
was floored.
I didn't know that because I
Yes.
kind of refused to watch the newest one, I have to say.
Well,
That's.
I have a post on ley lines, which shows the clip from that movie. It's on my site, Spooky Geology. And when I started that site, I thought, oh, I'm just going to go around and write posts about paranormal aspects of geology and weird geology and things like that. Well, I was overwhelmed at the content that I could possibly cover. And I took a step back from it for a while. So I don't know where to even begin on this. Like we were talking about, there was so much to do that I was completely overwhelmed. But I'm still thinking about it. I'm still working a little bit on it.
Yeah, there's I can touch put you in touch with an interesting guy actually. He writes Mysterious Sites of England and Wales, and I think he's kind of covered that in regards to that, and also so has, oh man, my memory's going. I think I can see these guys in my head. I can't remember the name. It's terrible. And he did some interesting experiments with the what's called lair caverns. They are some they're almost like Stonehenge-like structures. But they appear to be capped, so like there's like two upright circles, and there's one on top. And they did some interesting dream experiments, like underneath they slept underneath them, and what was their what dreams did they have, and some of the interesting things like that. And they were trying to map the geology of places, and was it having an effect on the biology of people? When
Interesting.
I find that paper, I'll send it over to you. I think you'd find it really interesting. So I think people have sort of gone. Well, there's these really interesting places, and there's natural places such as like Ayers Rock in Australia that have this profound look that that's got to be the gods must have done something there, and
Yes,
that
exactly.
because there's no way nature could have prepared something of that kind of awesomeness for us to see, unless God personally intervened and did all this.
And there's beautiful stories that surround those places
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
from the Aboriginal people, like both at Uluru, which is Ayers
Yeah,
Rock,
that's
and
right.
also at the Devil's Tower as
Yeah.
well.
So do they mainly come out of like folklore and natural local history?
They're the indigenous people looked at those sites and said,
Wow.
"This was the gods. The gods were here, and something miraculous happened, and the story got woven into their culture, and that's what they believe as the creation of that object." And it's beautiful. It really is a lovely thing. And so there's something called geomythology, where it just talks about just that thing, where the geology has played a part in the way people interpret their landscape.
It's interesting, isn't it? It really is. I think about so in the UK, it's quite interesting how all these stone circles have now they've now sunk to the point they're barely above the surface now. There's quite a few. I live, like I say, I live in Nottingham, and there's two or three here. But in Derbyshire, just like a county over, they're everywhere. But they've sunk so much because the ground's got wet over there for hundreds of years, and I think maybe 50 years they'll all be gone. So will they ever be
That's
seen
right.
again? Will they ever be seen?
Map them now, preserve them now.
That's it. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I saw a documentary also that I think it was Siberia. They had these giant stone bowls they found that they have no idea what they are. They appear to be half cupped into the ground and they're just strewn around. But whether that was by natural geology or over erosion, because there were pictures were taken in the 1800s, but they're no longer there because they've sunk into the ground. Fascinating stuff. There's so many places as well, like Karnak. That's the place I've always wanted to go.
Right. But again, there's an example, like we talked about the carcasses, where
Yeah.
people are disconnected from nature. They don't understand how natural processes work, so they seem amazing. But they actually do have a natural explanation to many of these sites. And that's what I would like to get people who are interested in the weirdness. then stay for the scientific explanation. That would be cool.
It just made me think about people who collect rocks and stones and fascinating trinkets and quartz and crystals and stuff. They claim that they have some kind of interesting properties and they vibrate
Oh
and
yeah.
yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
And then they say that certain places that have profound experience, so we talk about Devil's Tower, for instance, it might have quartz under the ground or something. I don't quite know why it would, but they would use that and go, well, there's lots of amethyst here. That's clearly a
Right.
reason or something. They would
Yeah.
associate the fact that there's lots of mineral deposits there, and that's a reason why it's spooky or something, or it attracts strangeness happening there. Do you find that as well?
Oh my gosh, it's everywhere. I'm just reading a book about mysterious places, and it's all about how he, this person describing the places, had to have his magnetometer with him and taking magnetic readings, and there were weird magnetic readings around there. There's a number of reasons why that could be, but he associated that with the strange place that people put that thing there, that structure there, for a specific purpose because there was a geomagnetic anomaly there that affected them, made them feel sad, happy, spiritual, whatever. We have a tendency to want to weave these threads together. And I think that if you portray them in a certain way, it sounds sciencey and it sounds to the layperson quite impressive.
Yeah, very science-y.
And it's often a lot of, BS thrown in there to make it, sound better than it is.
Yes, a lot of woo-woo going on, a lot of woo-woo.
Very much, yeah.
So Sharon, shall we draw ourselves to a close now? And I'll promise to meet you up and catch up in the future. I've certainly got some stuff to send over to you in that regard, though, because mysterious England and Wales. I definitely want to send over to you, and I'm sure I can find that paper as well. I think you'll find really interesting. But yeah, that was also fantastic that we've managed to catch up on this conversation. I've really enjoyed it tonight,
Me
and
too.
yeah, it's been fun. Been fun, and these
Yes.
things just happen more often. I feel quite disappointed in myself that I wasn't better prepared because I just ran over here. So I am ever so sorry that I didn't have my notes sorted. But I think we've had a fun conversation that allowed us to express this. So look, have a nice night, and I'll speak to you in the set very soon. Thank you very much for taking the time out to join me here today. I really do appreciate it. But if I could just ask one more thing of you, you could just press like, dislike, leave a comment, or press subscribe. You could do any on all of those things, but it allows me to know whether I'm producing the kind of content that you want to listen to. I do produce a variety of content, especially on YouTube and out into the world of social media. So please, if you would, thank you very much. I'm Christian Lander. Until next time.